So, Amy, has anyone ever accused you of overthinking things?
Yes. Just recently, a friend pointed out how much I parse and agonize over past conversations. How does your overthinking manifest?
The further I get from perfectionism, the more I see in hindsight, of course, how much it just kept me in my own head, constantly thinking and rethinking and re-rethinking. I was like always trying so hard to come up with the perfect plan and then never really taking action.
I have come to love the term navel gazing, or maybe hate the term. And so that's one of the things now is I'm like, oh, Amy, you're navel gazing. Stop it. And I guess we're not the only ones because one of our listeners said, I think the mental fatigue is what's most exhausting. Always questioning myself, my motives, and grading myself, and wondering how I'm doing. Am I doing enough? And generally beating myself up all the time for failing. Self preoccupation. I think if only I could keep the right focus all the time off of me and onto Jesus. And then I feel guilty about that too. It's hard to escape my brain.
Exactly that. I am so right there with her. So, girlfriend, if you're listening, please know I understand.
Me too. And we can't wait to talk through some solutions.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, good girls breaking bad rules.
Today, we're talking to Karen Eman, author of Listen, Love, Repeat: Other-Centered Living in a Self-Centered World. Karen Eman is a New York Times best-selling author, Proverbs 31 ministry speaker, and writer for Encouragement for Today. A wife and mom of three, she resides in central Michigan, where she enjoys cheering for the Detroit Tigers and processing life with many teens that gather around her kitchen island.
So, if you sometimes feel exhausted from the mental fatigue of constantly questioning yourself, Karen has some incredibly practical tips for getting out of your head so you can go be a blessing to others.
Some people will call it serendipitous. We would call it a God thing. But your newest book, Listen, Love, Repeat, came out at just the right time. This has been such a hard year for Americans. So tell us about your title and why the subject is so timely for us.
Well, I think that in our culture over the years, we have gotten away from putting other people first. You know, I think about when I grew up, how, I don't know, you held doors open for people and you said, you know, no, after you take the biggest piece, I'll take the smallest piece. And now I feel like it's completely shifted and we're all about ourselves, what we're eating, taking selfies, you know, documenting our every move. And what sometimes I do wonder if it's really that our culture's changed. I think it has, but sometimes I also think we just have better ways of documenting it now with social media and stuff. But and now it's morphed into not just like making life all about us and what we're doing, but now it's this unsolicited opinion slinging where we just go anywhere we can find and we sling our opinion and we badmouth people. We think we're just talking to them, but everybody on their wall and our wall, and every time it's shared, can see it. And it's just really, really ugly.
One of the key concepts in your book is something that you call a heart drop. Tell us what this is and give us an example.
It's actually something my mom did all the time when I was growing up. I just never knew what to call it until my husband and I were in a life group at church, and our life group leader, Michael, gave a name to it. Hearing a heart drop is kind of a way of listening between the lines when someone's talking and they're saying something without really saying it. You know, for example, you might be talking with me and you might mention that you have some medical tests next week on Thursday afternoon, and I sense a little bit of apprehension in your voice, and I think, she's saying something without really saying it. So I can listen for that heart drop and then I can do something about it. I can, first of all, record it and make sure I tell myself, whether it's a sticky note or an alarm on my phone or whatever, that, hey, next Thursday, you know, my friend has these medical tests. I think she's a little bit worried about them. And so I can either text you that morning and tell you I'm praying, or I can call you that night to see how it went. So it's just a way of listening for something that someone's saying, but they're not actually saying the words. And it also might be just sometimes your friend gives you a seemingly random piece of information. I'll give you one example. I had a friend, she and I went out to a coffee house. She gave her high maintenance coffee order, which was not as high maintenance as mine. Mine's really bad. My husband has saved it as a screenshot on his phone. It's so high maintenance, he can't remember. But one of my other friends and I were out, and she gave her a little bit high maintenance coffee order. And I didn't know anything was coming up in her life that was going to be sad or tragic or make her feel lonely or anything. I just felt like God was tapping me on the heart saying, hey, remember that coffee order. So I recorded it in the Notes app on my phone. And that was in the spring. And then that fall, her only child who would ever grow up and leave the house and go away and go to college did just that. And I knew she was going to have a really hard day. The first day that school bus, you know, went by with those high school students, and her son was at college. They just dropped him off about an hour and a half away. And so I showed up on her porch with her high maintenance coffee order and a box of Kleenex. And I said, hey, if you need a shoulder to cry on. And she was like, excited I was there. She gave me a hug, took the Kleenex and said, oh, what did you bring me? A mocha? A French vanilla? And I said, no, I brought you a, and I rattled off her high maintenance coffee order. And she started to cry. And she said, how did you know? And I said, because silly, the last time we were together, I recorded it in my phone. So just really learning to listen for these heart drops, to ask God to help you pay attention, to live alert mm-hmm. as you go through your day and record these little bits of information, whether it's that you sent someone saying something without saying it, or it's just a random piece of information that you're going to tuck away for later when that friend or that family member or coworker, whoever it is having a rough day. You can pull out that from your arsenal and go do something to brighten their day.
What I'm loving is the intentionality, because I sometimes tell myself that people who do what you did, well, it just comes naturally. You either have that sensitivity and a great memory to go with it, or you don't. And I excuse myself, but I hear a lot of intentionality on your part.
Yeah, I do think for me, it does. That's just kind of how I roll. I saw my mom do it. My mom and I are opposite personalities, but that's one way that we're alike. And I just kind of naturally roll that way because I was raised that way. However, I will say there are a lot of ways to practically do what someone else does naturally. And just like you said, you can be intentional about it and learn to do it, especially the first time you do and you see what joy it brings to the other person. It makes you want to keep doing it.
So then what do we have to add to our lives in order to hear heart drops? And what do we need to subtract from our lives?
I think you just need to add in your prayer life, Lord, help me pay attention today. Help me to notice that person who least expects to be seen and do something for them. And it doesn't have to be something elaborate. It can be just a simple text message or phone call. You know, it's just the concept of people being remembered. Like, I know for me, if somebody even just remembers something very simple, but sends me a text message on that day when I'm going to be having medical tests, or a card shows up in the mail right around the time that it's the anniversary of my sister-in-law, who is one of my best friends, her death, something very simple that really took less than 3 minutes for somebody to do, but it says I was paying attention and I remembered you. So I think we need to just naturally add that into our prayer lives and then pay attention when God says, psst, you heard what that person just said. You need to remember that, or you need to do something for them. It doesn't mean that we have to stop our life right that minute, but that we just ask him to continue to bring it back to our memory if we aren't someplace where we can write it down and then act on it. So I think we need to add that to our prayer life. And then subtracting from our life, I don't want to step on toes here, but I feel like there's so many things, like I was saying earlier, that our culture, we just do for ourselves. We're always on our social media, and not that it can't be a great tool. Social media can be a wonderful tool to connect with people and pray for people and all that. I'm not anti-social media at all. I have it all, but we need to think, why are we on there? Are we on there for ourselves? Just to tell the whole world what we're eating and what we think about the election or whatever. Yeah. Or are we on there kind of snooping around to see, hey, who seems like they're having a bad day? Who seems like they could, you know, use a little encouragement? So I just think the subtracting is the self-absorbed attitude. It's not necessarily we need to take things off of our plate per se. Although sometimes we can do that too, you know. Often we might have TV shows we just can't miss, and we spend 2 or 3 hours a week watching TV. Well, maybe we could cut back to 1 or 2 hours a week and use that extra hour to help our neighbor who's a lonely widow and feels like she doesn't have a friend in the world. It's just really being prayerful and then paying attention when God nudges you to do something.
Well, and I love having a little insight into Karen's life, because I know she made a job decision recently to cut back a little bit so that she could have the time in her life to follow through on these heart drops. So I admire that you live out your message, Karen. It's great to see and know. Well, so I had a friend recently who confessed that she didn't do things for others. Specifically, in her case, it was taking meals to other people because she was so afraid that her meal wouldn't be good enough. One of the focuses of our show is dealing with our perfectionism. So how do we get over the barriers to make a shift to be others-centered?
I think we need to remove ourselves from the scenario of being the person taking the meal or writing the letter or buying the gift or whatever it is, and put ourselves in the other person's shoes and think about, okay, when I was brought a meal, did I care that it had gourmet presentation that looked like it was from the Food Network? No, I just was happy that somebody brought me a meal. Like I'm thinking yes. back to when I had my children and brought them home from the hospital and, you know, was recovering from birth. I really didn't care. I was just grateful. I didn't have to stand up at that stove and try to make something, especially when I had a newborn, a toddler and a kindergartner. And my husband was working like 12-hour days and he couldn't help. I cannot tell you what any of my friends brought over, but I can tell you who brought them over. So I think so often we have the wrong mindset because we don't put ourselves in the other person's seat and think, did it matter to me? You know, even when we're having people over maybe into our house, we think, oh, it has to look picture perfect. But when I, you know, if I were to drop by either of your houses, I would be there to see you. I wouldn't really care what your house looked like or what you fed me. You know, but we just have these notions because we've gotten all caught up in the Pinterest perfect world and all these fancy shows. And I'm not against them. But what is disconcerting to me is that we think if we can't do it like all the experts and like all the ways we see on Pinterest, then we're just not going to do it at all. And that's wrong.
Okay, so now you're making it sound like perfectionists really spend a lot of time worrying about things that don't actually matter.
What?
Yeah.
I need a paper bag to hyperventilate in. You know, you bring up Pinterest and there's so many ways that our culture keeps us self-centered, focusing on ourselves, like you just illustrated, rather than on the other person who could really be blessed. And in blessing them, we could end up being less self-centered. I mean, it really is a mutual benefit. How can we recognize the things in our culture that are making us more self-centered and less others-centered?
Well, you recognize them because they're everywhere. But at every turn, it's really a constant upstream swim to not be this way, because it used to be our culture supported us being others-centered and we expected our children to be other. And now look at, you know, everything's, oh, you only live once, you only go around once, grab all the gusto you can. And so again, I just really feel like it comes back to your relationship with God, that you walk so close with him that you know when you're starting to stray off the path and you're starting to be someone who's, not that you're an all-out narcissist, but you're just thinking of yourself too much. And I don't say this lightly because it doesn't always come easy. And it's not wrong to think of yourself. I mean, you do need to sometimes slow down, do something that just rejuvenates you. I'm not against that at all. But I feel like it's the percentage of time. It's like we usually focus on ourselves and every once in a while we might do something nice for someone. And we think that by putting ourselves first, it's going to make us happy. But it is this total upside down countercultural truth. And this is exactly what I saw my mom live. I remember specifically, I don't remember exactly what happened in the middle school, but I was upset about something in middle school. Probably didn't get invited to a slumber party or something. You know, middle school, you either fight through it or cry through it, you know. I was upset about something, and I went to her, and I'll never forget what she said. She said, you know, honey, whenever you feel like your life is bad, things aren't going your way, you're all down and depressed, here's what you do. You remember that there's always someone out there who has it worse off than you. Go find that person and make their day. And somehow it makes your day as well. And, you know, my mom was a single mom living on a budget so tight it squeaked. We seriously sometimes didn't know how we were going to put food on the table. But I never saw her be discontent with her life. She had such a mission and she brought so much happiness to other people. And in a weird way, by her being so other-centered, it made her happy as well. You know, she's very opposite of me. As I said, she's quiet and shy. You never can get her to talk about herself. And I just hardly ever shut up. My husband says he's going to put a period on my tombstone. But I did just see how she had a lot of reason to think, oh, woe is me, I have a horrible life. She never thought that way. She just had like this mindset and this mission of okay, I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps. I'm going to keep going, and I'm going to see who I can lift up today that has it worse off than me. Go find that person and make their day. It's a great way to live.
You talk about losing your sister-in-law, Thais, in your book and how painful that was. Now, I'll speak from personal experience. People-pleasing often shuts us down when other people are grieving because we're afraid of saying the wrong thing and making somebody hurt more. So was there something someone did or said during that time that you found really helpful?
Well, I'll tell you what you don't do. You don't say nothing. You know, I think so often people don't know what to say, so they just, it's just awkward, and they see you in the hallway at church and they don't know what to say, so they just say nothing. I just love when people are honest. The people that just said, I have no idea what to say, but I want you to know that I love you and I hurt for you. And I wish I knew what to say, but there are no words. And I'm just so, so, so sorry. And then that didn't follow it up with, if there's anything I can do, let me know. Even though that's good and it comes from a good place in your heart, and I know people really mean it when they say it, that's the last thing that grieving person is thinking about is, oh, I need this done. I think I'll call someone. They're just too stuck in their grief. So I would just look at their life and think, okay, what do they have to get done? And I just do it for them. I would just say, hey, I'm taking your kids to Wednesday night church. Also, I'm picking them up early because I'm going to take them out to eat someplace, or I'm going to take them to the park and I'm packing a pick. I would just say, I'm doing this unless you tell me no, but this is my plan. And that's going to give you about a 4-hour block of time. If you need to just sit and cry, you sit and cry. Or if you need to go get caught up on grocery shopping, you get caught up on grocery shopping. But I know you got to keep going in life. And sometimes it's so hard to put one foot in front of the other. So I'm going to help you walk. Pray about what their needs are. Think about their life, what they need to get done, and just say, hey, I'm doing this for you. Unless you tell me no, I'm going to do this. And that is so helpful to people.
It sounds like what you talked about earlier, instead of focusing on how I feel, I'm putting myself in the other person's shoes and focusing on how they're feeling and what their needs might be.
Yes.
So you use Ruth as a scriptural example of someone who really helped another person in grief. What were some of the steps she took that we can adopt in our own lives?
I love the story of Ruth, how she stopped her life and put her mother-in-law first, and didn't just hop on a bus back to, you know, where she was from and just go on with life, but she went with her mother-in-law in her grief. And she was someone that really did model putting others' wishes in front of her own. And I think, you know, today we can adapt this principle of, especially when dealing with someone who's sorrowful, you know, we would love to just hop back to our regular life and put ourselves first, but we've got to go with people in their grief. You know, maybe a holiday's coming up and you think, oh, I've got to have my traditional meal and my kids all home and all the people here we love, and we're going to do it just like we always have done because that's our tradition and that's how our family rolls. And down the street sits somebody who for the first time is not going to have their spouse with them on Thanksgiving. You know, as much as you want things to be nostalgic and just traditional around your house, maybe you need to just say, but you know what, this year we're going to set an extra plate and we're going to invite that person down, and to not always have your own feelings of, and I want to say perfection, you know, because we look at holidays, we want them to be just perfect. But sometimes we need to put another plate on the table and realize that, you know, it might be a new tradition. Maybe we have someone new every year. Maybe there's always an extra plate. That would be a fun tradition. Just to go with them, go to that place in your mind to think, what is it that they're struggling with now that they're up against in their life that I can go with them? I just love how she went. She just went. And maybe for us, that's not today like she did. We don't change locations, but we go with them in their life. And I love too how she went with her and she said, your people will be my people. As a person moves through those various stages of grief, sometimes they don't have the energy and the emotional wherewithal to deal with their people. So you make their people your people. You take their kids places. You do whatever task it is they need. They need their dry cleaning picked up. You go do that for them and you say hey to their dry cleaner. Whatever it is, however they roll in their life, those daily things that they need to do, those people they interact with, ask yourself, you know, how can I maybe step in and take on some of those roles and help them through this time by making their people my people. And I too love just the way that doing this in another person's life, you know, really going with them in their grief and making their people your people, it can be an avenue to introduce someone to the Lord. If the person that you're ministering to in their grief doesn't know the Lord, they get an opportunity to witness up close you sharing the gospel by your very life, you laying down your life for that person.
I love that application of making other people our people. I had never thought of it that way. That is fabulous. That will stick with me. Well, what closing words do you have for our listeners? They are recovering perfectionists and people pleasers, and they're also people like me who are highly sensitive people who are trying to rely on God to be the strength of their tender heart. What parting words would you have for our listeners?
I heard it said once, and I wish I knew who said it, because I'd love to give the person credit. People don't really remember what you said. They don't really remember also what you did, but they never forget how you made them feel. And I think that's so true. You know, I think back in my own life of the people besides my mom, like the pastor's wife that first led me to the Lord, the youth pastor's wife who was very instrumental in me becoming a Christian and helping me in my early marriage. I don't really remember a lot of what they said. I really don't. But I remember how they made me feel. They made me feel welcome when I was in their home. They made me feel important. They made me feel listened to. They made my people their people. They made my problems their problems. And they just, I just loved being around them. But I can't put my finger on anything specific or fancy or profound that they did. They just allowed me to pull up a chair and sit next to them in life and to learn from them. And they just loved and encouraged me and didn't overcorrect me. I was a brand new baby Christian, didn't know what in the world I'd gotten myself into. But they would just kind of let me learn my own lessons and answer my questions about the Bible. And they just made me feel loved, wanted, and important. And I think that's really important for us to remember today.
Head over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode67.
You'll find links to this week's giveaway, Digging Deeper download, Bible verse art, and transcript.
We would love for you to come chat with other Grit and Grace girls about this week's episode. You'll find our private Facebook group at www.facebook.com/groups/gritandgracegirls.
Be sure to join us next week when we'll be processing together what we learned from our time with Karen.
For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it. Well, one of the key comments, it's early where I'm at. Sorry.
I love that.
I don't. I love when people goof up, because then when I goof up, I don't feel so bad. So.
Well, this is going in the outtakes. For once, it'll be me. Since I did the editing, I usually stick Amy in the outtakes. It's great.
There you go.